Hello, and this is the Archaeology News Weekly. I'm, as ever, David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. We have news on a winter solstice webcast direct from Newgrange. And in the first in two stories, we have Stonehenge. What now? A prehistoric toolkit is unearthed in Jordan. And archaeologists find the remains of a speared human skeleton in Australia. A 15,000-year-old flint spear tip is found in Ohio in America. And we have news reports on Neanderthal-human hybrids. Was that a myth? Fungus is once again threatening the Lascaux cave paintings, and an ancient cairn complex is under threat in Ireland. On the second of our stories on Stonehenge, we have more news about the tunnel plan being scrapped, and finally, ancient metallurgy relics are unearthed in Vietnam. Nothing like ending on an upbeat note. Newgrange in County Meath in Ireland is best known for the illumination of its passage and chamber by the winter solstice sun. Above the entrance to the passage at Newgrange, there's an opening called a roof box. Its purpose is to allow sunlight to penetrate the chamber on the shortest days of the year, around December the 21st, the winter solstice. At dawn, from December the 19th to the 23rd, a narrow beam of light penetrates the roof box and reaches the floor of the inner chamber, gradually extending to the rear of the passage. As the sun rises higher, the beam widens within the chamber so that the whole room becomes dramatically illuminated. This event lasts for 17 minutes, beginning around 9 a.m. in the morning. For the first time ever, the 2007 winter solstice illumination of the passage and chamber will be streamed live on the internet. The webcast and an exhibition at the visitor centre nearby celebrates the 40th anniversary of the rediscovery of the winter solstice phenomenon at Newgrange by Professor O'Kelly in 1967. The winter solstice event from inside the chamber at Newgrange will be broadcast on the mornings of the Friday the 21st and Saturday the 22nd of December. If conditions are good, the rising sun will illuminate the passage and chamber between 8:58 a.m. and 9:15 a.m. That's GMT. The webcast is available at www.heritageireland.ie/en/solstice2000. If it's overcast though, well, it'll be a non-event, so fingers crossed there. As plans for the Stonehenge tunnel scheme lay in tatters this week, Salisbury MP Robert Key called on government ministers to set up a stakeholder task force to piece together new solutions to the problems of the World Heritage Site and the area's traffic nightmare. For more than 20 years, both Labour and Tory governments have struggled to find an acceptable scheme for restoring the ancient stones to their original setting and easing traffic congestion on the fabled A303 West Country holiday route that runs directly past the monument. And the latest project bit the dust when Transport Minister Tom Harris scrapped a controversial proposal to bury the A303 in a 2.1-kilometre tunnel. Mr Key, who has been the area's MP since 1983, was once Minister for Culture and the Roads, branding the collapse of the tunnel scheme as a tragedy and a setback for the economy of the southwest of England. He said the unwillingness of the government to fund its own road proposals represented a breakdown in the machinery of government. Calling for the setting up of a stakeholder task force, Mr Key added, the government should consider the option proposed 10 years ago of a new visitor centre and car park in the dip of the Downs, 1 kilometre to the west of the stones, accessed from the existing A344 from Airman's Corner. This semi-permanent solution would allow new strategic consideration of how to upgrade the A303 and to remove it entirely from the landscape of Stonehenge. Before the end of the last ice age, a hunter-gatherer left a bag of tools near the wall of a roundhouse, where archaeologists have now found the collection 14,000 years later. The tool set, one of the most complete and well-preserved of its kind, provides an intriguing glimpse of the daily life of a prehistoric hunter-gatherer. The contents are described by Philip Edwards, a senior lecturer in the archaeology programme at Melbourne's La Trobe University, and show the owner of the bag was well equipped for obtaining meat and edible plants in the wild. There was a sickle for harvesting wild wheat and barley, a cluster of flint spearheads, a flint core for making more spearheads, and some smooth stones which may have been slingshots. There was also a large stone for striking flint pieces from the flint core, and a cluster of gazelle toe bones which were used to make beads, and also the part of a second bone tool. The finds, attributed to the Natufian culture, are from a site called Wadi Hamar 27 in Jordan. He believes the tools were enclosed in a hide or wickerwork bag with a strap that would have been worn over his shoulder. Such bags rarely had compartments, so the owner probably protected valuable items by wrapping them in rolls of bark or leather before placing them in the bag. The sickle, constructed out of two carefully grooved horn pieces, was fitted with colour-matched tan and grey bladelets. It would have been a marvel of form and function for its day, and is the only tool of its kind ever linked to the Natufian people directly. The toolkit's showpiece item, its double-bladed sickle, is now on display in the Museum of the Faculty of Archaeology and Anthropology at Jordan's Yarmouk University. A new report led by an archaeologist on the first evidence of death by spearing in Australia has been published in the journal Antiquity. The paper outlines the collaborative detective work that took place following the discovery of the skeletal remains of an Aboriginal male in the Sydney suburb of Narrabeen during the excavations for a gasworks in 2005. A number of stone tools interpreted as spear barbs were also discovered at the site. Lead author Dr. Joe McDonald from the Research School of Humanities said that the anatomical, forensic and artefact studies indicate death by spearing, and the archaeological evidence shows that the man was slain and abandoned in coastal dunes around 4,000 years ago. Ritual punishment using barbed death spears was witnessed at European contact in the Sydney region, and the Narrabeen man provides early archaeological evidence for ritual of revenge killings by spearing. The timing of this event is significant for understanding other archaeological indicators of increased social complexity across southeastern Australia. Dr. Denise Dolan from the University of Sydney analysed the slain man's skeleton and was able to determine that he was aged around 30 at the time of his death. Altogether, 17 pieces of flaked stone thought to be spear barbs were found around or embedded in his skeleton. A spear point found in a central Ohio field in the USA by a farmer has now been identified by archaeologists as being used by hunters to kill mastodons around 15,000 years ago. Don Johnson of Heath found the Clovis Point around 4 years ago while on a walk. Brad Lepper, an archaeologist with the Ohio Historical Society, says the point is one of the only remaining types of evidence of the Clovis Paleo Indians. The group, named for their weapons, used these points for around 500 years. Did modern humans interbreed with Neanderthals, and if so, did the mating result in half-human, half-Neanderthal hybrids? The answer is possibly yes to the interbreeding, but no to the hybrid, according to the authors of a new study that is already making waves amongst anthropologists. At the centre of the study, published online in the Journal of Human Evolution, and the current debate is a 29,000-year-old Romanian skull that is one of the oldest fossils in Europe with modern human features. But those features aren't quite a perfect match with us, which has led some experts to suspect it was a cross between a Neanderthal and a modern human. That's not so, according to study leader Dr. Caterina Harvati, a senior researcher in the Department of Human Evolution at the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology. She and her team took detailed 3D measurements of the Romanian skull and compared these with a similar head shape analysis of Neanderthals, modern humans, and fossils of other hominids. The researchers also studied animal hybrids and developed an unprecedented list of proposed criteria for evaluating whether or not a fossil specimen is a hybrid. The skull did not meet any of these criteria, a strong rebuttal of the hypothesis that it represents a hybrid. The researchers, however, do not rule out that interbreeding may have taken place. Modern humans and Neanderthals are very closely related species, so it's possible that, like living closely related species of primates of today, they could have interbred to a limited degree. If it did occur, however, it was probably a rare event, and the result was not significant in evolutionary terms. For the second time in a decade, fungus is threatening France's most celebrated prehistoric paintings, the animal images that line the Lascaux Cave in the Dordogne region of southwest France. No consensus has emerged among the experts over whether the invading patches of grey and black mould are the result of climate change, a defective temperature control system, the light used by researchers, or the carbon dioxide exhaled by visitors. But after inspection by a team of microbiologists, the government has approved a new treatment of the blemishes with a fungicide and ordered that the cave be sealed off for as long as 4 months so that its delicate environment can be stabilised. The Lascaux paintings, with their astonishing array of animals, are thought to be 15,000 to 17,000 years old. The early Europeans who roamed this region used crushed minerals to create some 600 images in red, ochre, deep brown and black, some so powerful and vivid that they're considered amongst the finest examples of Paleolithic cave art known. Since the paintings were discovered in 1940, however, their preservation has been a constant headache, with government officials in Paris and the local authorities criticised for failing to ensure their proper protection. By the late 1950s, visitors' breath was blamed for the appearance of lichen and small crystals on the wall, prompting the government to close Lascaux to the public in 1963. Since then, only 5 people per day, 5 days a week, have been allowed to visit the underground gallery by special permission, and tourists are steered into a replica of the cave complex nearby. The replica, known as Lascaux 2, opened in 1983 and now draws more than 250,000 tourists each year. In the real cave, new problems arose in 2001 when officials in charge of Lascaux decided to modernise the system regulating the temperature and humidity. Soon after this work was completed, a white mould began spreading rapidly across the cave's ceiling and walls. Whatever the reason for the problem at Lascaux, the white mould outbreak in 2001 led the government to close it to all non-essential visitors. It was so serious that, to stop the invasion, the floor was covered with quicklime, and scientists began treating the problem chemically. The new problem at Lascaux, however, does not appear to be linked to this fungus. Last year, the International Committee for Preservation of Lascaux warned of a rapid spread of black spots, which are now appearing where the traces of the Fusarium fungus have been removed by scalpels. 2 weeks ago, the International Scientific Committee for Lascaux decided to try a new method. Every treatment that they have applied had its own side effects. This is said by Anne-Marie Sear, the curator responsible for interventions in French caves. They cannot touch the figures with scalpels or chemicals, so they're now going to try to diffuse treatment in the air. Since this summer, the stains have darkened and expanded, although they're still in a limited area, and this shows that Lascaux suffers from an illness that must be constantly treated. What appears clear is that the discovery of Lascaux 67 years ago disrupted an ecological balance that helped to preserve the paintings for thousands of years. A €300 million world-class port facility, which is expected to be operational by 2012, is planned in Drogheda, in County Louth, Ireland, but those plans may have to be altered after it emerged that an archaeological site, possibly on a par with Newgrange, is located in the area. According to local historian Paddy Boyle, the site is highly significant and could be the oldest in Fingal. It's a complex of cairns, similar to what you might find in Loch Crew in County Meath, and as far as he knows, they have never been officially excavated. The largest cairn appears to have collapsed inwards, meaning that it could be similar in construction to Newgrange, as it probably has an interior chamber. Mr. Boyle described the site as an extraordinary example of megalithic tombs, which could be of enormous value both in terms of archaeology and tourism. The artist's impression of the new port, however, does not show the tomb complex being retained in any way, and in fact, the roll-on-roll-off terminal is positioned exactly where the tomb complex is located. More, I hope, on that next year. Now, back to Stonehenge. The decision to axe the 1.3-mile tunnel along a bypass to the west of the monument and a flyover to the east follows a detailed review of the plans by the Department for Transport. The government's decision also means that English Heritage, which owns the site, has had to cancel plans for a £67 million visitor centre. And English Heritage said it is very disappointed that the plans have been shelved. Bodies including the Council for British Archaeology, the International Council for Monuments and Sites, and the National Trust were among those advocating a longer tunnel to protect Stonehenge, a World Heritage Site since 1986. The decision, however, was welcomed by the Save Stonehenge organisation. The British government remains committed to working with stakeholders in investigating options for improving the environment of Stonehenge, including new visitor facilities and exploring possibly small-scale measures to improve traffic flows and safety along the now infamous section of the A303. English Heritage issued a new statement saying it is encouraging that the government recognises that improving the setting of the stones and the visitor facilities is a priority. English Heritage intend to work closely with other stakeholders to look into alternative ways to achieve this. So at current rate of play, it should be ready for next millennium, I would say. And finally, to end on an upbeat note, as I said, an archaeological site full of metallurgy tools and pottery dating back nearly 3,000 years has been discovered in Vietnam's central Can Ho province. The Vietnam Archaeology Institute found a number of bronze moulds and bronze refining tools, 8 tombs and over 126,000 pieces of pottery in the Vinh Yen 50 square metre site at Van Ninh district. The antiques belonged to an ancient village whose residents lived on agriculture, pottery and bronze casting. One also hoped that they ate some food at the same time. So lovely. If only Stonehenge was that simple. Can I remind people that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as a UK heritage calendar, library, guidance section, and so much more can be found at Badger, www.bajr.org. And both Badger and Past Horizons, our sister site, have blogs. Yes, blogs. You can listen to us now during the week. You can find them just by typing Badger blog or Past Horizons blog into Google. More can always also be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Thanks for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. I hope to untangle my tongue by next week, and we'll be bringing you into, well, nearly the new year. Have a happy Christmas.